The Koigig Pod on Off The Ball.
I do think they still have a chance, but I'll say it's all going to come down to that derby, and I think United sort of has that confidence at the minute.
Subscribe to The Koigig Pod on the Off The Ball app now.
Hey there, it's Owen here, and you're welcome back to Diverted, a 10-part original series for Off The Ball. In every episode of this series, we go to a different country in Latin America, or in the case of this week's episode, three different countries. We're going to do a whistle-stop tour through some of Central America on this episode. We're going to be visiting the basketball-obsessed highlands of Guatemala. We're going to be experiencing the beautifully quirky Premier League of Belize. And we will also be experiencing the 2022 World Cup through the prism of Costa Rica. As always, though, we're starting this episode by getting you back to the hitchhiking journey through Patagonia. And if you're a first-time listener, this is your heads up that these episodes happen on two separate timelines. So all that good stuff from Costa Rica and Belize and Guatemala is coming your way in just a few minutes after we bring you up to speed on Patagonian hitchhiking. Your heads up as well that there's going to be some more bad language in this episode, and this is your customary reminder that giving this podcast a good rating, if you liked it, would mean the world to me and probably the algorithm as well. Cheers. I like making friends. Honestly, I do. I enjoy other people's company, and I find sharing experiences with them something that can properly enhance a journey. But that's me as a person in my normal state. As a hitchhiker, I am not that person. As a hitchhiker, I'm a crazed, selfish, tunnel-visioned maniac who is reeling from a few challenging days on the side of the road. And now, I'm speaking to a man who wants to join me on my journey today. I'm in the process of hitchhiking the length of Patagonia from Bariloche to Ushuaia. My journey is expected to be around 2,500 kilometres long, and so far, 4 days after setting off, I've travelled a little over 850 kilometres. So I need to make up the rest of the journey for a flight that I have in 10 days' time. Right now, I'm in a city called Trelew. It's a Sunday, and the roads are quiet. So all I want to do is make the short journey south to Comodoro Rivadavia. It's a town on the Atlantic coast that is 375 kilometres away. So I've been chatting to a man in my hostel named Peter. Peter is from Germany and he's cycling through Patagonia. Today though, he's taking a day off the bike to do a round trip out to a place called Punta Tombo. Now Punta Tombo is where you might have a chance of seeing penguins, and it seems that Peter really loves penguins. Getting to Punta Tombo involves leaving Trelew via Route 3 and travelling south. I am leaving Trelew via Route 3 and travelling south. And when he hears about how I've managed to get here via hitchhiking, Peter asks me if it's okay if he tries to catch a lift with me today. Of course, I tell him that there's absolutely no chance of that happening, and I sprint ahead of him to the road to make sure I get picked up before him. I'm joking. I'm not that much of a heartless bastard. In fact, I'm getting myself to Comodoro Rivadavia today, and I'm going to get Peter dropped off to his penguins on the way there if it's the last thing that I do. We hop on a quick local bus to the outskirts of town and get ourselves to a YPF petrol station on Route 3 by 10:30 in the morning. We stand near the entrance and we begin to wait. Having waited for hours and hours on Friday, I'm prepared for a long stint here. In fact, I'm prepared for worse than Friday. You see, on Friday I was a solo, white male with a backpack, so I guess it was plausible that I could have been a murderer. Today, however, I am now one half of a pair of white males with backpacks, and this is probably the dynamic I would go for if I legitimately was a murderer. So basically, I'm worried that Peter's involvement will hold me back and bring down this whole journey. But I'm a sucker for his penguin narrative. And the minutes tick by. 5, 6, 7, 8 and 9 minutes. That is all it takes. 9 fucking minutes. One of the shortest time spans I've had to wait so far, and it's happened when another man has been standing beside me. It turns out, I was the sinister looking one all along. Peter has made my vibe more tolerable. He made me look like less of a creep. There is little time to consider what this revelatory moment means for the future of my personality, because a man has flung open his door and he's told us to sit into his Jeep. His name is Samuel, and he's on a 14-hour drive south to his home, Caleta Olivia. Given the eagerness of Samuel to invite two strangers into his car, it's no surprise whatsoever that Samuel is a big talker. And in today's game of Irish bingo, it is you two that he chooses to be his reference point for our small island.
You too, see.
But Samuel is more into religious music himself.
A mí me gusta más la música cristiana, tipo gospel.
He's a gospel kind of guy. In fact, he tells me that he's a gospel music singer. And we play all of the hits throughout our journey. The old reliable comes up, the 2022 World Cup. That is, of course, the World Cup that Argentina won, and the one that they won while I was in South America. But I am a complete bottler and didn't manage to get to Argentina in time for the greatest party humankind has ever seen. And Samuel finds my misfortune amusing.
Argentina no gana el mundial, no hay problema.
After a short section of road, it is time for Peter to go in search of his penguins. We drop him off at a junction, and he goes looking for another lift to take him out to the coast.
Safe travels, Peter.
Yeah, thanks.
Pleasure to meet you.
Muchísimas gracias.
Okay.
Muchísimas gracias.
Nice one, Peter. Take care of yourself.
Buen viaje.
I'm sure Peter will be fine, and I'm doubly sure when I bizarrely bump into him in Bolivia 2 months later. Yes, he would see his penguins. He would get on his bike afterwards and would continue cycling north through the continent. I begin to realise now why Samuel has been talking so much. Samuel is a very, very tired man. We're close to the end of his 14-hour journey, and he is flagging big time. I produce a pack of Mana Rayanas. These are these chocolatey biscuits, but the sugar rush can only do so much for him. He pulls into a petrol station. And we get some coffee. When we return to the car, he asks me to take over the driving duties. Now, this is not exactly earth-shattering gonzo journalism, I'll accept. Man drives car on opposite side of the road to what he's used to. Wow, big deal. But I'm not a very good driver, I will say, and I'm a little bit nervous. Samuel clearly senses my discomfort, so he starts filming me.
Aquí estamos con mi amigo. Nombre, otra vez.
Mi nombre es Owen y me gusta tu auto mucho.
He sends this video to his wife, and she responds with two shocked emojis and genuine concern. She types, "Does he know how to drive? They drive on the other side."
Hola, Samuel. ¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien, muy bien.
Estás en peligro.
It's very dangerous.
Eyes on the road. Eyes on the road, amigo.
I keep the speed down, and I start to enjoy taking this car down Route 3, where really there is nothing to look at except this never-ending line of tarmac through the infinite greyness. Eventually, Samuel asks me to stop so he can take back over. I think I've just been driving way too slow for him. And so, Samuel takes us home. He drops me literally to the door of a hostel in Comodoro Rivadavia, a place getting absolutely battered by the winds coming in off the Atlantic. Really though, this was the easiest day of the journey so far, and there won't be a day as easy as it again. Some of it will be the fault of certain maniacs I meet on the road, and some of it will be totally my fault. And my first misstep is when I get to my hostel tonight and tell the receptionist about my journey, and that I want to get to El Calafate next. She tells me that I must continue down Route 3 to get there. Of course, she has local knowledge and expertise. But I have Google Maps, and it is clear to me, an idiot with a smartphone, that continuing south can't possibly be the correct play tomorrow. Tomorrow, I will cross back across the country, back towards the Andes, and then move south towards El Calafate. I will eventually learn that when an expert in their country tells you to take a certain road to get to your destination, you should listen to their advice. I will learn this the hard way. Four months earlier. Welcome to match day one of the 2022 World Cup. Right now, according to the plans I made back home, I should be in Argentina. Instead, my slow pace of travel means I've only made it as far as Costa Rica. I'll be honest, I would be sickened if Argentina win this World Cup. But I might just be in luck. Because yesterday, Argentina were beaten by Saudi Arabia. I could have rushed to Argentina. I could have bought a very expensive flight. But I'm thankful that I didn't. Because I don't think they're winning this World Cup. I'm in San Jose, the capital of Costa Rica. Not exactly the most pleasant city in Latin America. But Costa Rica are in this World Cup as well, and being in their capital city for their opening game is probably where you want to be. Today, they play Spain in their first match. And who knows, maybe Costa Rica actually go further than Argentina in this World Cup.
Do you know what? Yeah. The Costa Rica jersey is class.
I know.
Yeah. Fucking nice.
I've just met a bunch of people in my hostel who are keen to witness a potentially historic day for the country. We've heard that the National Stadium is the place to go and watch the game. So we all hop into an Uber to get there, but we're running a little bit late.
Good. Oh, Spain, I'd say 1-0 up. Spain are definitely 1-0 up.
So we've already missed one goal, and when we get to the stadium, we're not allowed in. So it's back into an Uber.
Yep, that's us. Buenos días. Gol para España. No bueno.
No bueno.
That is a wonderful strike. Puts his team 2-0 up here.
We're either going to see the greatest comeback of all time or it's just going to be desperately disappointing.
Shock, horror. It would be desperately disappointing. We get ourselves to a big screen in the city centre, just in time to see Spain take a 3-0 lead. It's half time. We've barely seen any of the game and it's already over. Our group is two Irishmen, a Frenchman, a Belgian man, and a South African man. And this particular section of the United Nations makes the decision to go to the pub and get drunk.
7-0, histórico. Nunca antes.
We watch Costa Rica eventually get pummeled 7-0 as we come to terms with the most underwhelming possible instance of trying to live vicariously through a country that is experiencing World Cup fever. Match day two, honestly, is a bit of a missing link in this story. I'm in the touristy town of La Fortuna for Costa Rica versus Japan, but on the night of the game, my phone goes missing at a hot springs, and I honestly believe that it's been stolen. However, it miraculously gets discovered by a Canadian tourist deep underwater the next day. It's a very long story, maybe one day it'll get its own true crime podcast, but in the midst of all this commotion, I've missed an even bigger miracle.
Now, chance for Tejea. Fuller's shot! And it's in!
Costa Rica winning a game at the 2022 World Cup.
Keisha Fuller for Costa Rica!
1-0 is the full-time score. Match day three. I think it's better to have lost your mind in pure ecstasy for 2 minutes and 58 seconds than to have never lost your mind in pure ecstasy at all. somehow, after getting smashed 7-0 in their opening game of the tournament, Costa Rica are still alive. Spain are on 4 points, Japan are on 3 points, Costa Rica are also on 3 points, and Germany have a single point. The most plausible way through for Costa Rica at this point would be to park the bus against Germany today, play for a draw, and hope that Spain take care of business against Japan. It's not impossible. I am back in San Jose, and this, of course, is an anthropological study, a hugely scientific analysis of humans. So, I've gone to a beer garden. After just 10 minutes, Germany scored. I came to see the population of this beer garden throw pints at one another, but instead, the whole place has gone limp pretty early. Now, Spain have held up their end of the bargain and are 1-0 up against Japan. So at halftime, the situation is that Costa Rica only need an equaliser and they will be in the qualification spots. Still, not impossible. 3 minutes into the second half, and disaster strikes.
Goal there from Serge Gnabry. It's good enough for Germany at the moment, but here comes Japan.
Japan score. And a further 3 minutes later, Japan take the lead.
And here they come again, Japan. Into the danger area. Oh, it's in!
Costa Rica are now bottom of the group. They now need to come from behind to beat Germany to get out of the group. Now, it's probably impossible. But with 57 and a half minutes in the clock, Costa Rica arrive in the German box. A cross reaches a Costa Rican head. It's directed into the path of Manuel Neuer. He makes a slight mess of it, and Yeltsin Tejeda arrives. Yeltsin Tejeda is a man with an underwhelming career in Europe. He's a man who came home to play domestic football in Costa Rica. But he is the first to get to the ball. And he directs it into the bottom corner of the net. The beer garden enters a sort of slow motion, like the individual droplets of Imperial beer momentarily become visible. I am hugging strangers. Strangers that immediately become friends. Friends that become like family. A draw is not good enough to progress, but it does not matter, because Costa Rica have scored a goal against Germany. We are all drenched in lager. There is nothing better than this. There's still half an hour to play. Maybe Spain will do their bit and ensure a Costa Rica draw is good enough. Or maybe Germany most likely burst this bubble immediately. Or maybe Costa Rica send the ball into the mixer from a free kick. Maybe the German defence make a mess of it. Maybe the ball drops to Juan Pablo Vargas, the man who has never played club football outside of South America. And maybe the flailing leg of Juan Pablo Vargas is the first flailing leg to connect with the dropping ball. Costa Rica are going through. I am once again embracing my new brothers. One of them has bought me a tequila, and I've returned the favour immediately by forcing them to drink a round of Jaeger bombs. Ordering two rounds and consuming those two rounds can be done within 2 minutes and 58 seconds, I've realised. And it turns out 2 minutes and 58 seconds is all you need to carve a memory into your brain forever. Because I won't forget being here and witnessing this. As far as I'm concerned, this beer garden is the happiest place on earth right now. And 2 minutes and 58 seconds is not long enough for you to get filled up on all of this joy and for all of the joy to begin to leave your body. There is no cooling off. There is no come down. But 2 minutes and 58 seconds is precisely how long it takes for Germany to equalize. They proceed to go 3-2 up 12 minutes later. And eventually win the game 4-2. So, yeah, Costa Rica finished bottom of the group. It was always going to be the case, and no one really expected anything different before kickoff. But it doesn't matter, because Costa Rica had that 2 minutes and 58 seconds of going on a rocket to the outer limit of human happiness. These people couldn't have flung their beers any more wildly, and they couldn't have hugged one another any more tightly. They will not win this tournament, or even get out of their group. And that 2 minutes and 58 seconds is probably similar to how winning the World Cup would have felt to most of the people in this beer garden anyway. Sure, the dream was snatched away by Germany in cruel fashion. But to have dreamt for 2 minutes and 58 seconds is a privilege. The reggaeton comes on the speakers. The disappointment washes off. Meanwhile, Argentina have beaten Poland 2-0 to finish top of their group. And I begin to worry that they might have an outside chance of winning this World Cup. So we're going to hop around in Central America in this episode. And it's not that there's not a whole pile of other stories to tell in Costa Rica. It's just that I got to the coastal town of Tamarindo and I felt like Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon. The place had turned into a sort of spring break in November for college students coming down from the USA. It was probably the first time in my life that I said, I'm too old for this shit. So I get the hell out of there and up to Nicaragua. But at the border, I stupidly tell the guards that my occupation is a journalist. So it leads to this period of very mild but very annoying questioning where they warn me against doing any journalism in the country. And I decide that the safest thing to do is to settle for the harrowing outcome of venturing around Ometepe Island and then heading for the coast to San Juan del Sur and spending my remaining time in Central America on the beach. But a month before I ever set foot in Costa Rica, I have travelled over the border from Mexico for a quick trip to Belize. Much like your Costa Ricas, your Nicaraguas, your Honduras's, the beauty of Belize is in its coastline. Out at the beaches, snorkeling with incredible wildlife. You could call somebody who goes to Belize but doesn't visit their coastline an idiot. I decide not to go to the coast when I'm in Belize. Proof, finally, for all my haters out there. In my defence, on the bus from Mexico over the border, I've done some incredible half-assed research. I've been scrolling through football teams in Belize, and I stumble upon a team called Juventus. This piques my interest because I recognise the name, Juventus. But I see the club no longer exists, and football has actually disappeared from their town for a while. But now a new club exists in its place, called Progreso FC. Funnily enough, Progreso's crest now resembles that of Inter Milan. They're in the same town as ever, and the town is Orange Walk. So guess what? Forget your beach. We're going to Orange Walk. Now, Orange Walk is a fascinating place, and the first language I hear when I get off the bus is some form of German. There's a big Mennonite community in the town. We are pretty close to the Mexican border, but taquerias have been replaced by fried chicken shops. There is still some Spanish being spoken, but there's now also Creole, and there's English. Queen Elizabeth's face is on the Belizean dollar notes, and there are somewhat familiar brands, like they have Happy Cow cheese. Not Laughing Cow, merely Happy Cow. Unfortunately, I don't have time to ponder the levels of bovine contentment in Belize. I'm in the country for just 2 days, and Progreso FC have a home game. So I rock up to the Orange Walk People Stadium, and I approach people and ask the various characters if I can have a chat with them.
You're known to some of these people as the Bull.
Yeah, Mad Bull. My nickname is Mad Bull, but this is just a nickname where I get from school. I like it.
Mad Bull's real name is Ladrick Shepherd. He's the chairman of Progreso FC, and he's also the mayor of the town.
Let me tell you about Orange Walk. Orange Walk, when it comes to football, Orange Walk was considered one of the mecca of football. This is considered the people's stadium. International games used to happen in this game. Canada came to play here. We have international games. Also, in Orange Walk, we have one of the team called Juventus that won the most of the championship in the entire country of Belize. And unfortunately, they are all gone already, so they were trying to recover back again. There's also teams trying to get back to try to get that fame of Juventus. But I think the legacy of Juventus went too far. I think they won about 5 or 6 championships constantly. That nobody can even touch that. You win one, you win two, but you cannot win so much championships. So they were considered the best football players in the north. It was quite a while that we haven't have a semi-pro team. So when this team Progreso came out, So it was a plus for the people. As you can see, we don't have the fan base. When Juventus used to play, the whole, we have videos, the whole stadium used to be packed.
I dreamed about this last night, and you know, it's a dream come true for me now.
If all those people were out supporting Juventus, why aren't all those people out supporting Orange Walk and Progresso FC?
What we don't have at this moment is a face, a name, couple of players that you can consider high-tech players. People remember when you do sports, you need to have a name order that people support. Like, for instance, basketball, you have LeBron James. You know, in football, they have Messi, they have Ronaldo, things like that. It starts like that. You have to find good players so that you can sell it to the public so they can come out and support.
So you're saying it's a good decision to support Progresso FC?
I'm with you.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, no problem.
Cheers.
Sure.
Thank all right.
You. I'm from the Belize city.
This is Charlie Slusher. He's the manager of the team. And in an incredible coincidence, since I conducted this interview with Charlie in late 2022, he has actually gone on to become the head coach of the Belize national team, a role that he still holds at the time of the release of this podcast.
What's this town like?
Oh, it's lovely. It's peaceful. You know, lovely people. It's very diverse, a lot of culture, a lot of, you know, but, you know, I'm happy here. And like I said, really and truly, without making any other person in the other part of the country feel away, Orange Walk is one of the safer part of our country at this point in time. A long, long, long time ago, they used to call here Rambo Town. But there was a lot of, I won't go into that, but there was a lot of issue during that period of time. Right. But at this point, present day, it's one of the, in my view, it's one of the safest.
How many Belize caps did you get?
I got too many to I. In other words, I like to say more focus on years. I was probably part of the national team for over 20 years. I would say most of the games that I did play again was most in the Central American region, which was Honduras, Costa Rica, Guatemala, and those Trinidad, those teams.
And some of those teams have made a World Cup. Do you think it's possible one day that Belize can make a World Cup?
It's, for me, like I said, because I played this game and I compete with those guys, and there were actually some tournaments when I was voted the best player amongst them. I'm not even talking about maybe we can do it in the future. My strong belief was that we could have done it from years ago.
Are there many professional players in Belize?
Well, really and truly none. We are all semi-professional, and I mean semi-professional today. At the minimum, most of our Belizean players still rely on a steady job, 8 to 5 or wherever they need to work. When most of the foreign players, there are some teams that will have some professional players, and those would be the foreign imports that would come and help certain teams. But the culture, the tradition from here, from the existence of the top league in Belize, it has always been a semi-pro.
Are you confident for today?
Well, I gotta be. You know, it's always a pleasure to you're playing at home, and at the end of the day, as a coach, I have to be confident in my team. I know these guys. Like I said, we might be young, we might not have all the quality players as the other teams, but we have a lot of heart. Some of our fans are expecting you. You know, it's like when you're a Manchester City or Manchester United, those top clubs are used to something, so they always hold you at a high standard, you know. Yeah. So for us, that's one of the tough things for our young team, is that although we are a young team, although we are a new team, people in this district or this part of the country used to winning.
Playing in goals for Charlie today is a young man named Lewis.
This is a super young team. The guys are embracing the challenge very much, but we're getting pushed around, you know. These other guys are way bigger than us, but we're accepting the challenge. So the future looks very bright for us. We've got a lot to go.
If you walk around this town on a Saturday afternoon, you'll also get that sense. I just arrived yesterday and I came down to the pitch and there was this massive under 13 competition going on. Your daughter was playing in that.
Correct. Like I told you, once you come to Orange Walk, we're football every day. If you go to another field right now, there's a big marathon happening. Yesterday, the under 13, my daughter was in it and it was beautiful. The crowd was spectacular. We love football here every day.
And are there certain, you know, competitions in place and structures in place for kids that maybe you wouldn't have had as a kid now?
Man, that's what I tell everybody these days. These kids are so lucky. Back in my day, we didn't have anything. Football in Belize has grown so many levels. They have under 10, under 13, under 15. Back in my day, we didn't have any of those. I started playing ball till I was about 15, and it was just on the street side. But now the grassroots developing the kids is amazing. I didn't have any of those.
Your coach is calling you. I'll let you go warm up. Thank you, Luis. Good luck today.
Yeah.
Before kickoff, I spot this big individual. He's wearing sunglasses and he's wearing one of those hats that has corks hanging on strings off it. He's a very conspicuous individual, so I sidle over for a chat. His name is Jordan, and he is the owner and president of Altitude FC. And Altitude FC are today's opponents.
Well, I'm also an executive member on the Premier League of Belize, and I work very hard to push Belizean football. I don't know if you're following the Premier League of Belize on Instagram and Facebook. I'm responsible for all the graphics as well. I'm a graphic designer. I'm a member of the National Sports Council as well.
Can you talk me through your first association with football in Belize in general, and when you first kind of remember watching football in this country?
Well, I think everybody would like to call it the glory days, because you know, back in the early 2000s with big football clubs, Bandits was a big football club, Culture Yabra was a big football club. There was a team from Dangriga, they used to call Griga Mandala, you know, a very good team as well. And then, of course, Big Bad Sajetun, you know, and that being my grandfather's team.
Of course, Big Bad Sajetun. Now, I'm not sure if it's just Jordan's enthusiasm or if those glory days of Belizean football are something that everyone coming to this fresh actually wants to take a time machine back to, because I certainly do. Sadly, there is no YouTube footage of the likes of Big Bad Sajetun going up against the likes of Griga Mandala, but there are some newspaper clippings, and let me tell you, the battles between the likes of Hilberto Muschamp and Danny Diego sounded absolutely ferocious.
I was always around football. I used to carry the players' boots. I remember when my grandfather would bring the Brazilian players and I would wash their boots and everything. So it's definitely, football is built and stored in my DNA. And I've always wanted to make a difference, especially with the young people of my community. Where we come from is not really big, but the love and support for football is huge. And so it's an honor for me to be able to give back to my community in the way that I am, doing something that I love. We started in 2013 as a football club. Well, the name Altitude, I'm a pilot by profession. And so I had a nightclub and it was called Club Altitude because you always got to be high. So that's the name of it. And we just sponsored a football team. I had just recently returned from the U.S. from flight school. And so we ended up putting in the team just as a sponsorship. I'll be honest with you, the drive that I see within this team, this certain set of players right now, this is a top-notch team. These guys have the quality, these guys have the drive, and you know, with me as their owner and manager, they have my full support and the support of the South. We're South proud. We rep the South everywhere we go. We wear blue traditionally, and the blue is the colors that Sajetun used to wear. And being my grandfather's team, we took on the blue. He was blue and white, but we put the yellow on the team now, so it's blue and yellow, which if you look at my shoes, I have blue and yellow on my shoes.
Just FYI, it's a pair of yellow and blue Adidas Superstars.
But yeah, blue and yellow, and the yellow stands for the richness of the area where we're from, and that richness comes from the banana industry. We there are a lot of banana farmers. Most of the players have worked on banana farms like once or twice in their life, and so that's where we're from, and we're South proud, and we're more than happy to be representing the South. And one day I hope we can represent Belize. Hopefully that day is sooner rather than later. But we're definitely here to make a difference in Belizean football and in Belizean football entertainment.
In the middle of the field, we will line up and sing the anthem, and we kick off this big game between the fourth place team, Progressor FC, and the top team, number one team, Altitude FC.
It's almost time for kickoff.
We are at the countdown time until the anthem. The game starts at 3:30 p.m. sharp. Oh, they're here, they come. They line up, we get to the anthem, and we start the game sharp.
Things don't start on time in Belize. But to be fair, the town is readjusting to being back in the Premier League.
At 3:30, all games start on time with the PLB. So here comes the officials. As soon as they come, the teams line up, and we take up with our game at 3:30 p.m. sharp.
And really, the only thing that can stop a prompt kickoff is a DJ who can't find the national anthem button.
We're going to line up as we get into the anthem. DJ. DJ, anthem DJ. Anthem DJ.
We're ready yet, my boy.
The PA system is a speaker sitting at the back of the MC's Jeep, which is parked behind one of the goals.
All right, here we go.
Okay, time for the anthem. We ask all fans to kind of rise. So we sing the Belizean national anthem, asking all the fans to rise. So we sing the Belizean national anthem.
There's a crumbling, uncovered stand running along one sideline. A couple of dozen people are over there, some using umbrellas to shield themselves from the sun. And along the other sideline is a stand under a corrugated iron roof. There are a handful of people who take a bird's eye view by climbing and sitting on top of the roof. Everything they shout is within earshot of both dugouts. And there's also a small stable of horses behind that stand. This was once Belize's national football stadium. To be honest with you, it's now my favourite national football stadium in the world.
Okay, game starts now. May the better team win today. Altitude versus Progressive. Charlene in the house.
Arriving before the end of the first half is punctual enough around here for a lot of the fans, so the drink stand has no queue for now.
Okay, oh geez, did your body get hurt? Guy got hurt there. My name is Ada Romero, I'm the owner of ER's Icy Treats here in Orange Walk, and today we have our drink called the Chamoyada Loca, which is crushed ice, cooked sweet pineapple, and we have it with our chamoy sauce. And we have other Mexican treats, the tambram and the piña loca candy that goes on top. Yeah, it's really refreshing for a hot day, and we're out for the football game here today. Is your mic long enough to get to the cooler?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, I'll be able to hold it.
All right. Do you have TikTok?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have TikTok, so could get your TikTok in the end. So I make TikTok and. Here in Orange Walk, I do some prank videos.
Okay, nice.
All right, so this is a pineapple. This is actually like a Mexican drink. Since we're here in the north, we're influenced a lot by the Mexican side. And a lot of mestizo, so we like the peppery stuff, sour stuff. That's the good stuff. This is the chamoy sauce.
The chamoy sauce is a thick red liquid. It's made from pickled fruit. It's a bit sweet and a bit spicy. And then a tablespoon of a similar coloured powder gets added in on top.
It's a little spicy with sugar, salt. They call it picoré. It's really good. Would you like the tambram or would you like the gummies?
What do you recommend?
Everyone goes for the tambram.
Let's go for that one then.
That's the plastic straw that comes with a sticky, sweet and spicy exterior lathered on it.
All right.
Nice one, that looks amazing.
Whoa, it's gonna fall there. Here you go.
Thank you so much.
All right. Right. Enjoy.
Thank you, man.
Given I've got recording equipment on me, carrying this drink around at a football game is one of the most impractical things I have ever done. But in fairness to the number one TikTok prankster in Belize, it is delicious. The game itself, well, it's not amazing. Altitude are clearly the better team, and Progresso's ambitions in the first half are limited to the odd set-piece opportunity here and there. They do get to halftime scoreless, and the entertainment at the break comes in the guise of tunes coming from Alex's Jeep once again. The second half resumes, and Jordan gets more and more vocal in the altitude dugouts. Club owner, social media manager, head coach. He's got a lot on his plate today, and his team are banging down the door. It's clear now that a draw would be a good result for the home side. Chance after chance after chance comes along for altitude. But Progresso hold on. Full time, nil-nil, and it is joy. Progresso, they may not be going to the playoffs, but they've held on against a stronger, more experienced, better resourced team from the south. This is a good day for them. And I catch up with their manager, Charlie, again at full time.
Well, most of the players, they do some of them work, construction work, hard work, office work, from variety, any aspect of employment, most of them, you know, most of them would do. So there's no, and like I said, some of them actually work all day on their feet. You know, we train in the night, but like I say, it's all good. You know, it's been this way for so many years in our country when it comes to, you really cannot really live off football per se. You know, so the best thing is you find a job, go to school, get an education, so you have something to fall back and support your family. But keep doing what you do, what you love, and that's playing, and use it to maybe get where you want to go.
He's holding his young daughter in his arms as we do this interview.
She's I'm already training her, so this is where we have to start from in Belize. Sometimes we start from too late, yeah, but we got to start from early. But this is my little motivation, so yeah. You know.
Yeah, will we have a Progreso FC team for them in the future?
Oh, definitely. Not. She's gonna be national team also, so she's gonna be one of the best, yeah. And probably Progreso.
Yeah,
that's in the making.
Later that evening, when I'm back at my hostel, I get a call from Charlie. He comes to pick me up and brings me to a restaurant for chicken and rice and a couple of Belican beers. He brings me to his friend's house for a few more Belican. There's a handful of couples there with their young children, and they wonder why I came to Orange Walk, why I wanted to watch Progreso FC. And they wonder what else I'm going to do in Belize. And I must come across as the most boring individual in the planet, because I don't really have a great reason to give them for why I'm here. This is a place that once had a club called Juventus, and that fact was interesting to me. That's pretty much the long and short of it. And as for Belize, well, it's a trip to Orange Walk, and that's also about it. I've got to start Spanish school in Guatemala in a couple of days, so I do have to keep moving. But they don't seem to understand how much of a kick I got out of seeing this town and this football club in action. The first tourist who has ever visited Belize without going to its coast. That's potentially what I am. And these people definitely think I'm a complete weirdo. To Guatemala. It's my third country in Latin America after Mexico and Belize. And I need to turn myself from a shite Spanish speaker into a less shite Spanish speaker. Who knows, maybe I will want to do something stupid such as hitchhike when I eventually get to South America. So I go where plenty of people go to learn Spanish, to San Pedro de la Laguna. It's one of a number of small towns dotted around a lake. You get between these towns either by tuk-tuk or by hopping on a boat and crossing the lake. The irony of learning Spanish in a place like this is that a huge percentage of the town are indigenous Mayans. A lot of them have been raised primarily speaking the language Tzotzil. Spanish, for much of the population, is a second language, even though that does appear to be changing amongst younger generations. So, people come to San Pedro for Spanish school because, in San Pedro, Spanish school is cheap. And the location of the lessons is the most photogenic classroom you're ever likely to see. I stay with a middle-aged woman named Maria Mendez, her two daughters, and their children. She provides a bed and my meals. Her long dining table sits in a room with three walls and one sort of half wall. It's just a big opening to see as much of the lake as possible. The lake is Lake Atitlan. I sit there every day for a week, either in the Mendez house or at Spanish school with my teacher, Hector. Hector and I sit in these sort of raised huts with thatched roofs, and his style of teaching is conversational. We shoot the breeze for a couple of hours every day, and he's particularly interested in the basic economics of my life. How much my phone costs, how much I earn back in Ireland. We eventually get chatting about sport. He laments the fact that Guatemala will never qualify for a World Cup because there is simply too much corruption in Guatemalan sport. And then he tells me that one sport towers above all else here in San Pedro. And not only that, but because we're in the build-up to Christmas, we're about to reach the peak season of this particular sport. I tell him I need to see some of this happening. So, he gives me an address, and after Maria's dinner one night, I leave the house, I turn away from the lake, and start moving uphill. I snake through a couple of dark cobblestone alleys, then down what appears to be San Pedro's main thoroughfare, before turning back into one last alley. There's a pile of rubble to one side of the alley, but enough room to walk down the other side. And I literally walked towards the light. And the sound. Basketball. The alley opens up into a covered court. The floor is painted blue and green and yellow. The walls are adorned with pinks and purples and a couple of murals depicting local elders and imagery of the lake. There's a bright yellow and green building with a balcony right behind one of the baskets. a stage where some kids are sitting behind the other basket. The locals have packed the bleachers out on one side, and other people stand along the sideline across the way. It's the most beautiful basketball court I have ever seen. A girls' game is midway through. There's also a dog on the court trying to play point guard, but the girls just dribble around him. At halftime, I grab a chat here with Kathy.
Pedro normalmente se hace un campeonato en noviembre y diciembre.
She's telling me that a championship is held every November and December, involving 14 or 15 women's teams. She says it's the most popular sport around Lake Atitlan. And then she says,
es muy importante porque ayuda mucho a los jóvenes.
Basketball is very important because it helps young people to avoid other paths, such as drug addiction. And it's very important to be able to help strengthen the area. The average height of a man in Guatemala is 5 feet and 3 inches, while the average height of a woman is 4 foot 10 and a half. I've met a local man named Mauricio Garcia, and we sit down in the balcony overlooking the court. He is 6 foot 1.
Es un poco raro o extraño, stranger,
sí.
Ver a una persona en San Pedro muy alto.
It's a bit weird to see a very tall person in San Pedro, and I'm very tall. A lot of kids now are very tall, but 25 years ago, I think I was the only tall person.
Generally speaking, I try to avoid doing the Champions League magazine thing of getting a voiceover to translate directly to you, swathes of an interview that hasn't been conducted in English. But over these next few episodes, I'm going to have to make a couple of exceptions, because sometimes an interviewee is simply too interesting to cut out for the mere reason that they do not speak English.
1988.
I was 8 years old, and in 1988, I started to practice basketball. My first gift from my school principal was a ball.
Pero esta cancha no estaba así como lo miramos ahora.
This court was not like this as we look at it now. There was a lot of transformation. Before, this court was made of dirt, gravel, and then a bit of concrete. But no ceiling, no roof, no lighting. But I remember my father. He ran the championships every year. And I remember when I was very young, my father would put like sticks, poles around the yard, and we would put floodlights so there would be lighting. It was a lot of fun. That was my first championship at 18 years of age.
Pero nosotros los que somos de pueblos pequeños, de village, de small village.
Those of us who are from small towns, from small villages, we have to work and play. But there are people in the capital city who only play basketball their entire lives, and that's the difference.
Esa es la diferencia.
Because we feel very happy and proud because we also have a good level of basketball here. Considering we have day jobs, but we still play basketball. And I had the great experience of being called up by the national team.
Pero muchas veces el trabajo, tú tienes que decidir, o basketball, o un trabajo.
But many times you have to decide between basketball and a job, because basketball doesn't make you much money here. Most of us who participate in tournaments do it because we are passionate about basketball. We like it. We love it. Our blood runs in it.
Hay muchos niños con mucho talento.
There are many children, especially here in San Pedro, who many times are not given the opportunity when they want to represent the department. Sometimes there is a space in the capital city, but you have to pay for big schools, because in schools where there is a lot of money, there are more opportunities for the kids. But if you are from a very small municipality, you have to get money to pay for the boys' or girls' studies. But where can you get so much money when sometimes it is very difficult to survive here? Many star players are lost. They stay here and they don't progress.
Pero actualmente ahorita hay un poco más de cambio en donde.
Nowadays there is a little change when they give a little more opportunity to the kids, but they should give many opportunities because sport is also discipline. Sport is also education. Sport is also understanding life. Many people think that it is only sport. Okay, it's for fun, I understand. But I also feel that it is a means to compete, not only in tournaments, but many times sport helps you to be very, very intelligent, to make good decisions in life, because life is like a game.
Y algo que me encanta de basketball, ¿sabes? No hay empate.
Something I love about basketball is that there is no tie, no draw. The scores don't end 1-1 or 2-2. There is no such thing. In basketball, there is a winner and there is a loser. And it's almost similar in life. If you make good decisions, you win. And if you make bad decisions, you lose. But you learn from those bad decisions.
Ahora para mí, ¿por qué es importante el baloncesto para mí?
Now for me, why is basketball important? For me, it is a good way to say I love my father very much. But my father had a problem a long time ago. He was an alcoholic. And my father had been an alcoholic since I was a child. And I didn't want to follow my father's path. So for me, my father was a great example to make my life much better.
Y yo encontré en el baloncesto como un escape.
And I found in basketball an escape, you know? It's like an escape. Then I began to see that with basketball I could have fun, I could stop thinking about many of the problems that I saw in my family. And in order not to have too many psychological problems, I would come to play either football, basketball, or just run.
Y muchas veces a los jóvenes les digo ahora, si el baloncesto fuera religión.
And many times I tell young people now, if basketball were a religion, basketball would have been my religion. Because I feel that it saved me and has saved me from so many things. When I had big problems, I found many solutions with a ball. And this has been my idea now, to help many children.
En 1994,
in 1994, I founded a small basketball school. Now I've been trying for almost 28 years to help children and young people to play basketball, to keep them away from drugs, alcohol, bad habits. So basketball has helped me a lot now in my life, and I still play basketball.
Muy bien, Mauricio. Muchas gracias por la entrevista.
Es un placer, Owen. Para mí fue un privilegio.
It is a pleasure, Owen. For me, it was a privilege to have been with you because we also have this weakness of not wanting to recognize great talents sometimes in our village because often there is selfishness among us because we don't like to see one of us improve. But for me, it was a privilege that you have listened to me. It was a privilege to meet you and may the message go where it needs to go.
Y que el mensaje llegue donde tenga que llegar.
I've left the lake and traveled 2 hours north to higher land. This is Quetzaltenango, a city with over 150,000 people. It's also known by its Mayan name, Chela. I've been put in touch with a man named Marlon Escobar. Marlon is a basketball coach. It's a Saturday morning, and I meet him on a busy street in Chela.
Me gusta ayudar a las personas, no solo entrenándoles en basketball.
So Marlon is telling me here that he likes to help people, not only by coaching them in basketball, but also by teaching values and teaching principles to the kids that he coaches. Through basketball, he says he can help children and young people to be better. Marlon is going to take me up the mountains to a couple of towns where he coaches kids at the weekends. The destinations are important, but if you'll forgive the cliche here, this is all about the journey. For these journeys, we're taking the chicken bus. If you're unfamiliar with the concept of the chicken bus, they are basically retired yellow school buses from the United States. They get driven south to Guatemala after over 150,000 miles have been clocked up, and then they get a makeover. They get painted in bright colours with wild patterns. Because with low literacy rates in the country, the colours are supposed to help identify the routes. When the bus is packed, you squeeze as many people as possible into its confines. That can mean four people crammed into the left-hand side on each row, and four people crammed into the right-hand side. And, of course, a person standing in the middle. There's quite often livestock transported in these buses as well, and the presence of chickens on the bus has led to its name. The drivers blare music through a boombox, and they drive along winding roads through the mountains. They blow their horn to let people know they are coming around the corner. and they blow their horn to tell people and animals and other vehicles to get the hell out of their way, because these roads belong to the chicken buses. The drivers drive with a sense of stubbornness and aggression that can only be applauded, really. And their confidence makes you fully trust that they won't mess up the next hairpin bend and drive off the face of this mountain. The first town we get to is called Totonicapán. Like many towns in the region of Guatemala, there's a big square in the middle of the town, with the church being the main building on the square. But there is this large municipal sports facility on the outskirts of town, with football pitches and outdoor basketball courts. There's an indoor basketball court as well. And Marlon goes inside to coach one of the teams for what appears to be some sort of friendly game. I get chatting to another coach called Roberto.
Sí, la verdad que a mí me gusta mucho el básquetbol desde niños, de los 7 años vengo practicando el básquetbol.
Roberto was saying here that he has been playing basketball since he was 7 years old, that it has helped him a lot, not only in his health situation, but also in emotional situations. He talks here about giving children and young people the opportunity to invest their time in sport and not be involved in other situations, in other vices, and even to get them off the phone.
Incluso hasta sacarlos del teléfono, que ahora es algo, las cuestiones digitales que los mantienen muy absorbidos.
Not long after, it's back on the chicken bus.
Hoy, ver dos realidades. Reality.
Sí.
In basketball.
Sí.
Toto, very good.
Sí.
Momotenango, más o menos.
Ah, sí, okay.
When it comes to the popularity of basketball in Guatemala, I've seen people make the connection between basketball and the ancient Mayan ball game, whose courts you can see at places like Chichen Itza in Mexico. But the sport's popularity is maybe more down to the NBA being beamed out on TVs in Guatemala during the 1980s. Or maybe it's as much to do with the fact that these outdoor covered basketball courts are relatively straightforward to build and cheap to maintain. We have arrived in a town now called Momotenango. It's higher in the mountains, and it begins to rain. I shelter in the cafe of a man named Miguel Angel Ambrosio, the local doyen of Guatemalan hoops. He tells me that the town is also preparing for its winter tournament, just like the one they have down on the lake.
Pero el baloncesto en la actualidad está ganando mucha fuerza. Creo que...
He's saying here that basketball is gaining a lot of strength, that technology today allows the sport to reach new places, that it awakens the magic that happened here in the late 90s, seeing Jordan, Pippen, Rodman and Karl Malone on TV. It has awakened the interest of many young people today to jump into that beautiful space, that beautiful world of basketball. He says it's possible in the not too distant future that they will have a star in basketball, that they do not lose hope, and hopefully soon a Guatemalan will appear on the courts of the NBA. And he says,
El baloncesto no solamente me gusta, me apasiona, al igual que el café.
I don't just like basketball, I love it. I'm passionate about it, just like coffee, because in my adolescence, I reached an emotional or behavioral problem without knowing where to go. And at that moment, basketball appeared in my life, and it became practically my air, my food. I lived, dreamed, and died for basketball at that time.
Mi aire, la comida, yo vivía, soñaba y moría por el baloncesto en esos entonces.
Half a dozen kids show up to a court. Marlon does a couple of dribbling drills. And we hop on another chicken bus. Our final stop is to Salcajá, a town that's home to San Jacinto Church, the oldest church in Central America. It dates all the way back to the year 1524. And in the shadow of one of the most historic buildings in this continent, there is, of course, a basketball court. It's dark now, but the floodlights keep it going. And these are adults' games. And there's a men's game currently on. One of the teams is called Duque. They're all wearing Duke University basketball jerseys. I get chatting to a man named Dempsey.
¿Cómo estás?
Bien, pues gracias a Dios, bien acá. Cuando tocan Salcajá, pues estamos enviando un cordial saludo.
He's the local commentator for a Facebook stream, And he's a bit of a character.
I was interviewed by Dempsey here on Facebook Live a few minutes ago. I thought he was just taking a video that wasn't live, but it was live. So a big shout out to everybody out there who was watching the live broadcast of me fumbling around for any little syllable of Spanish that I did know. I truly apologize for completely butchering your language.
The other thing that this area is known for is a drink called Caldo de Frutas. It's a strong alcoholic beverage, and Dempsey is offering me a drink.
Because what we are drinking is a thing in this black plastic bag.
I tried to ask him if this drink is legal.
Es legal?
And he replies multiple times saying, yes, it's liquor.
Es legal.
Es legal?
Yes, legal.
Si?
Si.
Si?
Si. Okay.
Bien. Is this going to completely fuck me up?
Ecole. Si, si.
Salud.
Salud.
I'm in grave danger.
Está rico. Riquísimo.
Muy bien.
Está riquísimo.
It is. It's very, very nice. It's like when you have like the mulled apple cider at Christmas, except it's cold, obviously. It's just like apple juice, but it's like clearly absolutely laced with alcohol.
As I struggle to maintain my composure after my first Caldo de Frutas experience, I say my goodbyes to Dempsey and to Marlon and to the now victorious Duke team.
Duke! Que te de olvidar, cuánto has querido, yo te supe dar, solo y herido.
There is one stop left in Guatemala, though. It's the capital city, Guatemala City. I'm due to get a flight out of here tomorrow, and I also want to meet one person before I leave. His name is David Goddard, and really, there aren't many people who know more about basketball in this country than David. My expectation of Guatemala City was based on what I've been told. Run down, not overly safe, a bit of a shithole. The reality, in the district David tells me to meet him in, is different. This is Zone 16, a zone where you would be forgiven for thinking that you're slap bang in the middle of Milan.
And yeah, right now we are in Zone 16, which is one of the high-end zones here in Guatemala. Yeah, this is not what you're typically going to see when you're in Guatemala City, but the range of wealth here is incredible. People who think there's not money in Guatemala don't really know Guatemala. I mean, you see Ferraris, you see, you know, people with quite a bit of money.
Let's talk about your story. Okay. And how does a man from Kansas who's a successful high school, college basketballer end up in Guatemala?
So my mom is Guatemalan and my dad's from the States. I had played high school ball at a high school in Kansas, and played college ball as well. I had an uncle from here in Guatemala that had contacted me and had told me, listen, I don't know how your college career is going. I don't know what you're planning on doing, but here you could represent the country. You could play internationally representing Guatemala because of your mom. You could also make money playing ball out here and use your knowledge to be a coach and a trainer and that kind of things. And for me, it was never a question of yes or no. It was always, okay, whatever I can do to continue playing the game and to make a difference in the lives of people playing the game, I wanted to do it. Whether that was to leave my city, leave my country, leave my family, I said not behind, but leave them, you know, for a while and come out here, that was always my plan. So I decided to do it. I came out here, not a lot of money in my pocket, but I decided that I was going to play ball, make a living playing ball and teaching it and whatever it takes to do that.
How do you make a living playing ball here?
So here there's no pro league. Basically, I'll give you an example. So like three times a week, I play in different cities all around the country. So I could play maybe one time a week here in the city. One time I would go play in Totonicapán, which is about 3 hours away. Another day I could go play in Coan, which is another 3 hours away. So basically two or three times a week, or as many times as you can, as your body can handle it, you play outside the city and they pay you per game, right?
Okay, so you could just get a WhatsApp today and be like, listen, Dave, there's a game going here. There's a few hundred quetzales going. Do you want to pop up?
Exactly right. So usually I try to do no more than three leagues at a time. But most of the money that you make as a player is outside the city. Here in the city, you have teams that pay, but it's not compared to what you make outside the city.
Who's financing these games?
Usually the owners of the team. Sometimes the owners of the team are like in the government in the city that we're playing in. Sometimes they're just business owners that for pride they want their business to represent and be the best basketball team in that area. So it just depends, but it's usually one person. Sometimes the teams, everybody on the teams puts a certain amount of money in order to raise that amount of money to pay for me and apart, you know, my gas money, my food and all that kind of stuff. best places are the ones outside the city, because literally the whole town, the whole village goes to see the game. And screaming and yelling and insulting as well. But I take it as, you know, I don't take it to heart. I take it as, you know, it's part of the game. But those environments are amazing. They're amazing because you get an authenticity of these people, how passionate they are about a game. You know, there's even certain sides that bet on the games, and they're, you know, into it. And there was one game. So Barberena is a town that is probably an hour away from here, the city. And Santa Rosa is a town that's like, it's close by as well, but they're rivals, right? And so I was playing for Santa Rosa, and we were playing against Barberena. And I mean, every insult that you can think of, these were yelling every insult, insulting your mother, your sister, your girlfriend, all different kinds of things, and yelling and this and that. And I remember in the middle of the game we were playing, and we started beating them, you know, at their home, on their home court, pretty bad. And you know, some fans started getting into it, and I remember that they started to storm the court, and this is something you don't see all the time. It's something, you know, you really don't see it a lot, but the fans started to storm the court, and so us reinforcements and players kind of just went to the side, and we just kind of all stood together, and nobody was messing with us, but they started a fight in between them. And I remember one of them broke a drum over the head of another person, and then one of them hit, you know, and it was just like a fight going on, you know, over this rivalry and this passion that they have. And of course I'm not saying that's, you know, that's good. It's not a good thing, obviously, to fight and to do, but you just see that these people are just so crazy about, you know, their hometown and representing their hometown. And so anyways, they finally cleared the people off the court, and we finished the game and everything. And it was, you literally go to these towns that are outside the city, you know, 4 hours up in the mountains in the middle of nowhere, and these places are full. And these guys, you know, have the newest Kyrie shoes, they have the newest LeBron shoes, they have, you know, jerseys, they nice jerseys, and they have, you know, thousands of people there watching the game. And it's incredible. I mean, the experience is incredible to see this passion that people have for the game of basketball.
That must be so interesting from your point of view, inserting yourself into these situations where you might not know a whole pile about a place, and all of a sudden the happiness or otherwise of an entire town is on your shoulders.
Exactly. It's a lot of pressure, you know. That's what they tell you: listen, we're relying on you to get us through this game, to get us to the finals, to win the championship. We're relying on you, you know. And you know, a lot of times, I mean, you'll see in certain towns there are some players on the team that are pretty tough. They're, you know, they're little guys or whatever, but they, you know, they try hard, they shoot the ball well, and they're pretty tough players. They don't got a lot of fanciness in their game or anything like that, but they're effective. You know, and then there's other towns where, I mean, it takes, I got to make 50 points, I got to get 15 rebounds, I got to guard some guy that's 6'5". You know, I got to bring the ball up, get the rebounds, bring the ball up, score the points, do everything, you know. And then if you lose the game, it's my fault. You know, win the game, great. You know, it was a team effort. You lose the game and it's your fault. So, I mean, it's a lot of pressure, but it's something that as an athlete you love.
Any experience that scared you a little?
Definitely that fighting experience. Certain areas, when I had traveled to Mexico and played in certain tournaments, certain things, narco activity. I've had a lot of people who have tried to hurt me in certain areas, you know, try to take my legs out, take my knees out, that kind of stuff. But no, I mean, nothing too dangerous, nothing too crazy.
All on the court.
Yeah, all on the court. Exactly right. All on the court.
You said something really interesting before we started recording, and it was about the stylistic differences between Guatemalan basketballers and American basketballers. Can you talk us through that and how playing on courts here and how establishing your style here is not so much of a challenge, but is maybe a little bit jarring to an American basketball viewer?
Okay, so basketball here in general is way behind in a lot of different aspects. So when I first came out here, for example, nobody had ever seen in a fast break situation somebody pull up and shoot a three. Okay, this is something that we see Steph Curry now, and it's, you know, it's something that's common. And even here in Guatemala now, it's somewhat common. But because of my style of play, people in Guatemala started to call me Gringo Loco. That's my nickname out here. So if you hear anything about the Gringo Loco, that's me. Okay. I have gotten a lot of discussions with many coaches about my style of play, because according to them, it's too flashy, right? Here, out here, for example, the philosophy is, okay, we need to do 5 passes and set 3 screens, and then we're going to get an open shot. And my response is, okay, but if I can make one move and I can get an open shot, why am I going to waste those 15, 16 seconds doing that? You know, so more and more people are starting to accept this style of play. It's taken years for me to get them to accept it, but they see it in the NBA. They see it in different situations. But it's still, I mean, a lot of people have said, well, this style of basketball does not work because Guatemalans aren't that skilled to be able to do it. And I think that's crap. I don't believe that at all. You know, I think that we're putting limitations on people that you shouldn't have to put limitations. Yes, basketball is years behind in a lot of different ways. Obviously, height out here is an issue, but that's actually, for me, more of an inspiration, more of a reason for the guys to be more skilled and for having to use those one-on-one abilities to create space and that kind of stuff.
Why is basketball so popular in this country?
That's a good question. It is actually the second most practiced sport in this country. I think for a lot of different reasons. I think possibly because you don't need a lot of stuff to practice it. You need a ball, you need a hoop, you know. You don't need a ton of resources and golf clubs and this and that and whatever, you know. But it is – the sad thing about that is it's the second most practiced sport. However, there's not a lot of formality when it comes to it, and that's something that I want to change. There's not a culture of practice. There's not a culture of, okay, well, I'm going to train, and you know, when you're an adult or when you get past 18 years old, it's like, okay, but what now? Okay, well, I'm going to keep playing it, but every once in a while, you know, with my buddies, with my friends, there's not that, like, the highest level is the selección, the national team, right? And there's some people that aspire to that. But, I mean, there's no, okay, well, I want to get the scholarship in this school. Or, no, I want to be a professional player in the pro league here and make money. You know, there's not that option out here. So, I mean, everybody works towards getting outside of the country, right? I want to work to be good enough so I can go play in Mexico. Or I can go play in El Salvador. Or I can go make it to the States and get a scholarship. And that's what people aspire to is to get out of the country, which is sad because Guatemala, there's enough resources to have a professional league. But it's the same, you know, Latin America, the same story, corruption.
That's a common trait when I speak to a lot of people who are just sports fans, and they come back to that same thing, corruption, whether it's football, whether it's basketball. Why do you think it is so prevalent here, and do you have any sort of hope that in your coaching career you will see things change on that level?
You know, in all aspects of the government, unfortunately here, it's about the same people putting money in their pocket and furthering their career. And you see people starving to death, you see people on the streets begging for money, and where is all the funds of the government going? You see, you drive down the road, even in these areas that are nice, and you got these huge potholes in the road, and even in the police system here, you get pulled over by the police, and it's like, okay, well, we just got to pay them a certain amount of money, and they let us go, no big deal. It's things here are seen so normal that aren't normal. You know, corruption is so widely accepted here, and it shouldn't be that way. And unfortunately, the youth is, the ones that pay the most for that. So, yeah.
No, you're all good.
Uh-huh.
Are people pissed off about that?
Yeah, I mean, people are tired of it. People are tired of it. But if that's the way the system has always been, people start to accept it. Just accept the system and go with it. They do marches and they do this and that, and different things have been a part of different things that, you know, protesting this. But the people who are in charge are so powerful, and they have such a hold on this that, I mean, they are backed up by military, or they're backed up by narcos, or they're backed up by people in high positions in the government. So it's like they got all the money, they got all the power, you know. Unfortunately, the government here doesn't take care of its people, and a lot of people suffer from that. I mean, you go to certain areas here and you see people living in the trash. You see people begging for money on the streets. You see kids asking for money. You see, you know, all these kids that should be in school. You know, the public school system here is, I mean, it's just awful. It's terrible. Everybody has to go to a private school just to get a decent education. Even the private schools here, certain ones aren't great. You know, so you see it in your everyday life. I think that a lot of people that live in these areas are so in their world, they're so filtered to it that they try to ignore, you know, they see a kid at the stoplight asking for money and they ignore them, right? And, you know, they see certain situations, people living in shacks or, you know, people begging for money, anything, and they just live in their own bubble, you know? And it's easy to do in a certain way because, you know, you live in these areas and you got, you know, restaurants, you got everything. It seems like you're living in the States or you're living in Europe, right? You know? I'm blessed that I can I have the ability to give scholarships to certain kids and everything. What I do is, you know, that I was talking about is I do skill training. I do like player development. It's a certain aspect of basketball that doesn't exist here. Everything's a team practice out here, and my idea is to be able to train kids to get them prepared to play anywhere in the world. You know, I would like to open up an orphanage. I would like to open up a school where I could give the opportunity to a lot of kids, not just here in the city, but all over Guatemala, to study, to get an education, to be able to work, live off of something that, you know, they can do, to give them an opportunity in the sports world, you know. And so it's a process. That's the name of my academy, the process, for a reason, you know. But yeah, I mean, you can't leave things up to the government. It has to be, you know, individual people who want to make a difference, for sure.
What's motivating you to keep going and not go back to the United States and have an easier life?
I love the game. I love the game of basketball. Like I said, I sometimes travel 3-4 hours to play a game, get right back in my car and go back home and do it the next day. To be able to make a living, something that I love, and try to make a difference in this country is something that motivates me every day. I have a son. He's 6 years old. He's right there on my arm right here. Me teaching him how to shoot. But he motivates me too. And the fact that I've seen the difference that what I do makes in the lives of certain people. I have kids that play in Mexico, have received scholarships to play in Mexico. Kids that have gone to the States. I have a guy that plays right now in the Pro League in Great Britain, and is studying there, full scholarship, and plays there. And just being able to make that difference in the lives of people motivates me. You know, by the grace of God, every year I've advanced more in what I'm doing, and been able to affect and touch more lives, and I love that, and it motivates me every day.
This has been episode 6 of Diverted, a 10-part original series for Off the Ball, produced by me, Owen Shahan. Lots of the music you'll have heard in this episode are original tracks produced by Jason Ahern. A word of thanks to Brian Weaver, the Washington, D.C.-based man who opened the door to a whole world of Guatemalan basketball contacts for me. And also to Carlos Kessler, the Guatemalan voice you'll have heard translating the interview with Mauricio Garcia. If you like this episode and have subsequently clicked follow or subscribe, or have given it 5 stars, or told your mates about it on Bebo, you will be in my good books forever. My handle across social media platforms is Owen Shahan, as all one word, and there is video content across those platforms to accompany this podcast, and all of that information is in the show notes. In the next episode of Diverted, we will travel to Peru, where my comeback from a broken nose means I've got to delve into the Amazon with little to no preparation. Also, part 7 of my Patagonian hitchhiking journey, where we endure the most chaotic day yet. Chat to you then. Thanks for listening.